Hello and welcome to Reframing the Future, the HGKC podcast series where we talk to business people about their experiences and challenges of building successful businesses. I am Kim Jones and I am delighted to welcome today Paul Netto from Equifino. Paul is an accountant with a great track record helping independent businesses achieve their goals and through providing really superb strategic and practical planning advice and financial advice. He has helped many business owners sleep better at night, including me, through his sound and practical advice. So our conversation today is about meeting one of the biggest challenges that business owners face, that of exiting their business. So welcome, Paul.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you very much for those kind words.
You're most welcome. Well, we've known each other for quite a long time, I would say. And let's tell our listeners all about that. So you have been our company accountant for several years. Like many firms, we really struggled with finding someone who had the really right balance of expertise and also that genuine motivation around understanding our business and providing advice that we could do something with, you know, not just generic stuff, so that we could make better decisions in our business and that we could really grow. And now that we've found you, we're sticking with you. And we're really so grateful that you founded your own firm, Equifino, to bring that value to other business owners.
Thank you.
So I think it would be really useful to tell people about yourself a bit and, you know, how you've got to this point with Equifino.
Yeah, well, I've been in this industry for over 20 years. And I think the main thing I realized quite quickly working with independent small businesses is a couple of things, really. One of them was I really enjoyed getting to know the business owners and not just the person who runs the business, but them in their personal lives. And I really felt that helped me deliver better advice for these people, purely because I would look at similar businesses but have different outcomes because you understood exactly where they wanted to. Also, flexibility in their approach. You know, small business owners have to be flexible, have to pivot, and they're great at doing it. You know, we're a nation full of small businesses, and it's a wonderful environment to work in. I really am passionate about working with these people. I've spent some time in the bigger corporate world, and I realized quite quickly that wasn't for me. I much preferred working with independents, working with the decision makers. And the second point is I realize in this independent world, you can't be all things to all people. So having a trusted advisor in working with you is very helpful, and building, you know, the key word is there is trusted, really, because once you trust somebody, you properly let them in. And I think once business owners find that trusted advisor and they let them in, they should notice that the advice is tailored more to them, not just specifically to an industry or this is what we generally see. The advice could be more specific to those people. So my passion really is about that. It comes through. I've got the professional background. I've done all my qualifications, but it's not that that drives me. You know, that's there to give me credibility, to show that I understand, that I know the legal and compliance. But what drives me is actually getting into businesses and helping the business owners achieve whatever it is they want to achieve. Now, sometimes they don't know. And I don't go in from day one going, what do you want? At day one, it's all about building relationships, understanding, and really getting to know them. Then over time, just introducing the ideas of where do you see your business going? Where do you see the rest of this going? What's 5 years? What's 10 years? You know, how far do we explore, and really get into grips with that, and them feeling comfortable. But first and foremost, it's building relationships.
And, you know, this is the most important part of that relationship, isn't it, that we're talking about today. This is about helping people at that most critical point, you know, and for some people, they'll only do this once.
Yeah,
you know, and it can be their everything, their business. You know, so it's a fundamental decision. You're going to take them through something which is the first time and the only time they're going to do it. So they haven't got other experience to draw on. It's this, and they really do rely on the advice that they get at the early stage, you know, about the exit itself. a lot of people, you know, they just don't think about it early enough, do they?
No, I mean, and that is very true. I've come into companies and met clients and known them for quite a while. But what we have got is, yeah, some expectation that they thought, well, you know, we might go to the end and then we'll have something to sell. But they don't really understand what that looks like, what they need to do. You know, some people just think you get to the end and you sell it. And you know, yeah. That's obviously not the case. There's a lot of hard work that goes into there, but that hard work can be shouldered by the advisors you have around you, because really everybody is good at what they know. And what you want to be left is to do that, because that will help you grow your business. Then fill the blanks with people you trust. And that doesn't have to be all internal. That can be relationships with third parties, like accountants, business advisors, coaches, legal people, all of that environment, which will help you achieve the true value. And that's what it becomes to you. The earlier I think you recognize where you want to go, the earlier you can really kind of expect the true value, you know, really get it out there. So yeah, it is something that not many people think about probably as early as they should do. But then that's what myself and others are there to help them, is to guide them and bring these questions.
We find that when we're working with people is, you know, my job is really to help people widen their options, you know, and think expansively about the future and the sort of future that they would like. And that might be a really good place for us to start, you know, to thinking about, well, what type of exits are available to SMEs, Paul?
That, you know, this is a great place to start, purely because, you know, people think Excel, I'm selling my business. And generally people will come and think that it's, oh, well, you know, I'm selling it, I'll be selling it to somebody else. But that isn't always the case. Generally, you'll find value in businesses with teams in place. So there are lots of options out there. We've already said, you know, third party sell. There can be a management buyout or employee buyout or an asset sale, depending on the type of business, or which is something I don't come across a lot in the world I work in, but private equity sale, where you get private investors come in and buy maybe part of the business. But that's, I wouldn't necessarily say that's something that's common in the SME world. I think most common type of approaches is probably third party or management buyout. I would probably say those are the two most common. And then employee buyout, which I think is becoming more popular. It's definitely, there's a lot more material out there now on employee buyouts, and asset sale is what it states.
Well, so that's, you know, we are beginning to see some, you know, financial attraction around things like EOT and other ways of exiting, aren't we? So, you know, in terms of either taxation benefits or those sorts of incentives, and the more we have out there, the more attractive it will become. You know, there's some great news around Ovation Finance today, for instance, in the press, you know, celebrating their 4 years of successful EOT.
I mean, the EOT, the Employee Ownership Trust, is something that, you're right, it's an attractive option, but it's one that, in terms of when you're looking to sell, there's a lot of work that goes into that, because the whole point of the Employee Ownership Trust is, you know, it is what it says, the employees own it, they're running it. You need to make sure you've got your firm in place. It's something that I'm considering in the future for Equifino. It's something that's very close to my heart, because I want to give back to the people that will help build the business. So yeah, the Employee Ownership Trust is definitely something that I think, from an owner's point of view and from an internal cultural values and then the people that work for you, is it kind of brings it all together and feels like it's very right for how people are kind of moving towards.
And some of this is kind of time scale dependent as well, isn't it? Something like an EOT is a longer process. A management buyout is generally a longer process, because you've got to make sure everything's in place. You know, if you're looking for something in a shorter horizon, and that may be, you know, around other considerations for you as an individual business owner, you know, the other routes are genuinely quicker.
Yes, absolutely right. I mean, sometimes your exit might be restricted by how, you know, we mentioned it earlier, but how early you thought about your exit, because you're right, management buyout and employee ownership. And I would say of the two, the management buyout might be, yeah, it won't be as quick as a third party, so, but it might be a little bit quicker than the OT, because you can bring in the management team that have the skills and might have been in that industry. But in an employee ownership trust, it's about culture, values, because if you don't get those right, it's going to fail. Yeah. And you don't want that, because the reason I would imagine most people who do an EOT have got more than just the final figure in their head. You know, yeah, it's about the longevity, something
about legacy,
lasting,
isn't it?
Exactly. So, you know, when you talk about EOTs, you talk about legacy planning in that respect. And you have to have the culture from the bottom up and top down, side to side. It has to resonate through the whole workforce for the EOT to really benefit from it being an EOT.
So what do you think some of the financial considerations are then for achieving a successful exit?
So when I'm talking to people, the first place you do start is what they need to come out with, because this business would have supported them financially. Some mm-hmm. of them may have been very well and had a business that could also support their living as well as their saving costs. So they might not need as much on an exit. Others might have planned for the business to be the whole exit strategy. So first place you start with anyone is how much do you need? Because that realistically then determines where you have to go to next. You know, how much do you have to put in? How much hard work do you need to achieve those figures? And what do you need to put in place to achieve at least that? Because that becomes your minimum. So that's the
benchmark. I think that's a really interesting perspective. You know, it's need, not want at this point. You know, yeah, what is really going to sustain you in the future? And, you know, some people are going off to another venture. You know, they want the proceeds to invest in something else. So, you know, they're looking at it in very different ways.
Need. It's also making sure the individuals are realistic about the value of their company as well, because, yeah, you know, if you're turning over a couple hundred thousand and you want £2 million for the business, you need to kind of sit down and say, all right, to achieve £2 million, we need to go through X, Y, and Z. But it isn't £2 million right now. So it's managing expectations. And also, don't forget, we're in a world where it's them. The business is them. So it's very personal, this process as well.
Yeah. Well, that brings me to my next question really neatly, because it does often start with value, doesn't it? You know, how do you value a company? What are all the things that matter around this in terms of what different industries you're in? I'm sure it must be really varied from what you see in your everyday practice.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, typical valuation models might be worked on an EBITDA, EBIT, or, you know, we're moving towards some industries that work on fees, so net fee income or recurring fees. And then traditionally what's applied in the private sector is a multiple, because what we don't have in our sector is the added benefit of looking outwards to companies like ours and what they've sold for. Whereas when you go to maybe listed PLCs, their benchmarking is slightly different because they'll have comparables. But in our world, it's more about kind of figuring out what kind of the industry is doing at that point, you know, going across the industries from service sectors to manufacturing. You know, there'll be different models to value on in that process. But generally, it will work down to either a net fee income or a profit-based calculation on a multiple to work out what, generally, you'll get into the goodwill value plus assets, and general sales will probably be on a no cash, no debt basis. So those are the type of models which then gives you, right, okay, when I know the model I'm working towards, whether it be a profit-based or a fee income-based, and you'll have a general principle of multiples, they work between 1 and 10, generally sit between 2 and 6, depending on the attractiveness of the market, then you work on getting those values up. What do we look at? Do we look at net fee income? How do we increase the value of that? Or do we work in the profit-based area? How do we increase the value of that? Also taking into account, not detrimental, don't ramp it up and then leave a shell that's not got anything actually there, because you'll still have financial due diligence. So whilst these might be the multiples to get to the goodwill value, people will still strip the accounts apart. So you can't have ramped something up and then, but actually I'm loss making because I've done
it. You know, you can end up loading up your balance sheet with a load of debt.
Yes.
You know, because you've kind of tried to superheat, you know, your sales number or an investment number or, you know, your WIP numbers because you've invested in stuff that you haven't yet sold, you know, and it's not necessarily all realizable at that value, and that comes out in the valuation.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is about understanding where your company will be valued and making sure those figures are as attractive as possible, but doing that in a responsible way so that it does add value and you're not stripping the value away somewhere else.
Yeah. We've talked a lot about people in this, you know, and I think that's a really big component of someone transitioning as well, you know, it is making sure that those people are financially, you know, rewarded. What do you see around that that goes on in terms of, you know, keeping your key people?
There are often incentives for key individuals. We've seen share schemes in place to keep key members of staff. We've seen, obviously, the traditional bonus schemes. There might be awards on sales. So there are various schemes to kind of attract and keep key individuals that benefit their strength in growing the business. And you're kind of trying to tie these key individuals into creating and moving along in the terms of the line of what the business is. So it's very hard sometimes to bring people in line when you do cash incentives. So it's very important to understand when you're doing this, what is the ultimate aim?
Yeah.
And do these awards, incentives, work towards that aim? Because if they don't, you're going to get a very disjointed, and your key individuals we're talking about here, very disjointed in their approach to things, which could take them far apart rather than bring them together as a team. And definitely what you want is if you've got key individuals in there, they're going to be looked at. They're going to be looked at to stay with the company. If there is a third party, let's say a third party comes in, they're going to be really important to the sales. So you'll want them to be in line with one another. They'll want to see generally that management team talking, having strength, having knowledge, but also communicating with themselves, good team management. So it's very important for those individuals when you're deciding on incentives that those incentives work towards the final goal and don't take away, again, not detracting value.
That's really useful. I mean, that's a great run through of the top, you know, the top lines for someone considering exit. You know, it's about, you know, really understanding your business, putting your effort in the right place in terms of what kind of exit you want, sorting out your valuation, and also getting your team aligned. Have you got any other top tips that you would add in there or a little word of advice?
I kind of touched on it a little bit earlier. It's being realistic, but that realism will come from your advisors. So you're talking about the advisors managing the expectations of the client, understanding that we haven't got an endless pit of money out there. You know, and your business will be worth what it is worth at the end of the day. And we can do everything we can to maximize the strength of this business. But it's about having that realistic approach and planning properly for it. You know, planning is key. So realistic and planning.
I think my top tip is start early.
Start early. If you could do it from day one, that would be brilliant.
Yeah, widen your options. I'm not sure necessarily day one, because we often see people in the startup world, you know, obsessed with their exit before they've actually built something to sell. You know, they're talking about exit at concept stage, you know, which is also equally unhelpful. You know, so starting too early.
Yeah, it is about getting, you know, timing that right. But again, that is the importance of having good communication with not just internally and the people around you that support you, but also with your external advisors, you know, talking early with these people. And it's important when you touched on it, when you're coming through a startup, you know, the people around you, they need to know and understand you. And then communication will flow and timings will fit better. So they'll have the conversation with you at the right time. It won't be, oh, we want to sell in a couple of years and you're just starting the conversation then. It'll be we want to send by X date and you've started the conversation maybe 10 years ago.
Very true. Paul, I think that's a great point to end our conversation today. You've just proved to us again and again that, you know, finance is more than numbers. You know, a good financially healthy exit, it's more than about numbers, it's about people and relationships. And for our listeners today, if you want more of that value, please get in touch with Paul Netto directly through his LinkedIn account and profile. And if you follow our hgkc.co.uk, you'll see that we have a wealth of knowledge around exit planning and some blogs to support you on your journey and your thinking about this route. Thank you very much for listening today, and we look forward to hearing from you soon.
Thank you, Kim.
Bye-bye.
Bye.